It is Thursday, November 8th, 2012. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Christina Thomas. KUAF is supported by Eureka Springs, the Victorian mountain village, featuring various shops, galleries, tours, clubs, spas, and massage. Outdoor activities include horseback riding, canoeing, hiking, and more. Information regarding activities and attractions, plus a vacation planner, events calendar, and newsletter registration, available on the web at eurekasprings.org.
KUAF is also supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
Ahead on Ozarks, a conversation about Arkansas's economic future. And we meet comic Robert Kelly. He performs at the UARC Bowl in Fayetteville this evening and tomorrow evening.
But first, voters in Benton County this week face some delays at the election polls. County Election Commission Chair John Brown Jr. says the county ran out of paper ballots in the middle of the day.
We had ordered paper ballots. The demand for paper ballots was more than we expected, and some precincts were running low on paper. We had to go to Fort Smith to pick up paper stock because there was none available in other areas in northwest Arkansas.
Brown says the county has a machine that will print out more ballots very slowly, and that after getting more specialized ballot paper, the county printed out additional ballots to send to the polling places.
We sit down before election, look at past results of how paper ballots were voted in the precincts, and more people asked to vote on paper this time than they have in the past. And we just didn't order enough printed ballots.
Additional reports surfaced Tuesday that voters in some precincts in Benton County used wrong ballots, but Brown says that there is no way to go back and correct those ballots that lacked voice in certain municipal elections.
Once they press confirm or deposit that ballot in the ballot box, they have voted. They need to look at that ballot when they're voting and make sure that the positions on there are the ones that they're voting on. But once you press confirm on that machine, you voted. There's no way that we can find your ballot on that
Brown tape. Says, as a rule, voters should look at sample ballots for elections in their precincts before going to vote so that they can be sure that they're voting on the correct races when they enter the voting booth.
Supporters of medical marijuana in Arkansas say their ballot issue received more support than they thought it would. And there might be a second try in the works for a future election. Just over 51% of voters rejected the proposal. David Couch, with Arkansans for Compassionate Care, says the portion of the proposal that would have allowed patients to grow their own marijuana if they lived more than 5 miles from a dispensary might have been a deciding factor for voters.
You know, I think that was a point that was brought up that some people had concerns with, and we don't have a problem with taking that out. And I think that will eliminate a lot of the concerns people had.
Had voters passed the measure, Arkansas would have become the first southern state to legalize marijuana for medicinal purposes.
In a press conference yesterday with members of the media, Governor Mike Beebe said Republican gains in the Arkansas legislature will not have an impact on his top priorities.
My agenda continues to be the two cornerstones of economic development and education, and that's not going to change. My agenda continues to be, with regard to tax relief, the sales tax on food first. That's not going to change. They may have a different view, but it's not changing my agenda.
The governor says he's willing to work with Republicans who now control both chambers in the legislature. He attributes losses by Democrats to having a president on the ballot that's very unpopular in this state, but the governor admits his party can make gains in 2 years.
Oh, I think it's all about the candidates. I think you can look up and down this ballot. I think it's all about the candidates. And sometimes good candidates lose because it's the trend. But more often than not, you can buck trends with the kind of personal relationships with candidates. But that's what you got to have.
Governor Beebe says Arkansans are notoriously independent in their thought process when it comes to voting for candidates.
The United Way of Fort Smith is holding its inaugural Youth Day of Caring this weekend. High school students from Fort Smith Northside and Southside, Van Buren, and Ozark, as well as students from the University of Arkansas Fort Smith and Arkansas Tech University in Ozark, will be engaged in the Day of Service Saturday. United Way spokesperson Mitzi Little says that the event is all about giving the students experience in giving.
We just wanted to let the youth see, you know, the volunteer aspect of the community and how much can be done. We want them to start at an early age so that whenever they are older and they're out in the workforce, they will know what volunteering is about, and they will already be familiar with United Way and Day of Caring, and will want to continue that throughout their lifetime.
Little says that the students will perform work at United Way member organizations in the area. Organizations include Project Compassion, St. Scholastica Monastery, Abilities Unlimited, the Salvation Army, and the Boys and Girls Club in Alma, just to name a few.
Just different things, you know, that's going to help each agency. Some of these agencies, I mean, they are nonprofit, so they don't have the money or the manpower to get these things completed. That's what we do with our Day of Caring in April, and that's what we are also doing with this Youth Day of Caring now.
The Fayetteville School District will celebrate the 50th anniversary of Asbell Elementary School tonight. School opened in 1962, and District Communications Director Alan Wilburn says that the celebration is apt to be like an Asbell Elementary class reunion.
A lot of former teachers, former students, parents of students that went to Asbell, there'd be a lot of those. Oh, I remember you. You were in Mrs. So-and-so's class, and a lot of that types of thing. There will be a presentation that the students have put together about the history of Asbell that they're going to do an assembly earlier in the day, and then they'll do it once again for the gathering at 6:30 on Thursday night.
Although the district is celebrating the golden anniversary of Asbell Elementary tonight, another elementary school in the district recently received recognition for another type of achievement. Happy Hollow Elementary was recognized by the Arkansas Public School Resource Center. The school received the center's annual District and School Academic Growth Award. That award given to two districts and schools with more than 60% of their students showing growth in academic achievement. Wilburn says that the academic achievement has grown at the school as a result of teachers getting more feedback on how their students are doing.
One of the programs that we're using, it's the measures of academic progress testing that we do four times a year, because the benchmark used to be just once a year, and that's you had one shot at it. Using the MAP testing, we're able to look quarterly and see how students are doing, and this data is fed back to the classroom teacher, so she knows how all 22 or 23 kids in that class are doing in every specific area, and what little Johnny's weaknesses are, what his strengths are, and what things that we can do, particularly in mathematics and literacy. There are very specific concepts that he either does or doesn't get, that we can work with him to help him better understand those concepts.
As part of the award, the Fayetteville School District received $8,000 and Happy Hollow received $3,000. The award was sponsored through a grant by the Walton Family Foundation.
Partly cloudy this evening with a low of 52. Wind gusts as high as 35 miles per hour. Partly cloudy tomorrow, Friday, with a high of 73 degrees in northwest Arkansas, 81 in the River Valley. Windy again with some gusts as high as 35 miles per hour. Friday night, partly cloudy and breezy with lows in the upper 50s.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas economy is slowly recovering. It's a song and dance routine that economist Dr. Michael Paco of the University of Arkansas Little Rock's Institute for Economic Advancement has been singing for quite a while now. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business recently sat down with Dr. Paco to talk about the state of the state's economy.
Well, let's talk about what you visited about earlier this week in your forecast. You said that Arkansas is slowly recovering. Why are we slowly recovering? What's not allowing things to jumpstart?
Well, you know, we're slowly recovering because that's the course that the rest of the nation is following as well. We're really just tracking right along with the U.S. as we get out of this recession. There are a few ups and downs along the way that are somewhat unique to Arkansas. And, you know, there's been some weakness in consumer confidence and business confidence, for that matter, associated with political uncertainty. You know, those are the factors that are affecting the whole nation. Here in Arkansas, the agricultural economy has had some impact on the ups and downs. We had some spring flooding in 2011 that I think contributed to the weakness we saw in that year. Things are looking pretty good this year, actually, in spite of the drought in Arkansas agriculture. But it's been something of a roller coaster recovery, is one way I characterized it at the conference on Tuesday.
Looking back just a few months ago, we actually saw something that you described as a mini dip. I know you and I had some exchange about it. I saw it in the economic data as well, where we had been kind of moving along at a pretty solid, steady, kind of tortoise pace. And then all of a sudden, there was just the 2 or 3 months of just a drop-off in things like unemployment got worse. We saw some sales tax collections take a dip. Describe what this mini dip, kind of how it performed.
Well, there's really been kind of two mini dips over the course of this long, slow recovery. There was 2011, which I characterized last year as the lost year, where by some measures we actually experienced slightly negative growth. Things seemed to pick up then in the fall of 2011 and into the beginning of this year. But then around summertime, April, May, as we got into the summer months, we've just seen weakness in retail sales data from the taxable sales series. We've seen a weakness in home sales that I really wasn't expecting. And even some employment figures that aren't as positive as I was expecting. So it really looks like we're heading into the end of this year with some uncertainty as to how robust the growth rate is moving forward.
I talked to a Little Rock Federal Reserve Bank board member just about 2 days ago, and he was telling me something that we've heard a lot about in political conversation and certainly in economic circles, that Arkansas didn't take it as much on the chin as a lot of other states did, particularly other parts of the country. And he said that data really is, that it is true. I mean, we really did not sink as low as a lot of other states did. How well did Arkansas do compared to its sister states?
Well, you know, with every data revision, it seems like we're now seeing that the recession was more severe than we thought it was. But throughout all that process, it's clear that Arkansas was not hit as hard as the rest of the economy. I think probably the most telling statistic is the unemployment rate. Arkansas, we topped out just above 8%. In the U.S., we peaked at 10%. So that spread between the unemployment rate nationwide and our relatively lower unemployment rate has persisted throughout. It's narrowed a little bit in recent months, but we definitely haven't had as severe problems as some of the areas of the country.
Speaking of unemployment rate, we've gotten very close to getting below the 7% mark that has not happened for almost 4 years, I think, is how long that's been. I noticed, too, in the Metro numbers that came out this past week that we saw Northwest Arkansas dipped below 5% in its unemployment rate, Central Arkansas below 6%, both of those for the first time since the recession. That's got to be an encouraging sign.
Well, yeah. I mean, the unemployment rate actually came down quite a bit more rapidly than any forecasters were expecting, beginning in the end of last year into this spring. When we look forward at the job growth that's been occurring since then and what's anticipated next year, however, it's really not, it doesn't seem robust enough to generate further declines in unemployment. So as a result, my forecast for the unemployment rate is that it's going to remain pretty much in the neighborhood where it is right now for the next several months, and we probably won't see any significant downturn in that indicator until late in 2013 and maybe accelerating into 2014 when we're expecting growth to really start to pick up a bit.
When you look around and see where jobs growth is actually being created, and I look at those unemployment rates, and I know there's not a perfect sync up there, but they definitely correlate. Can you say that Central and Northwest Arkansas are really what are carrying the bigger part of Arkansas as a state, or do you see other regional aspects of growth in other areas where there's better performance that just isn't getting attention?
Well, Northwest and Central Arkansas are the big population centers of the state, so when you're looking at the statewide trends, they're going to be the drivers. But if you look at some of the smaller metropolitan areas in the state, they're really doing remarkably well. Texarkana has been growing pretty strongly. Jonesboro has done well throughout the recession. It's kind of mixed around the state. I think that the area that's clearly been the hardest hit, and most recently by declines in manufacturing, is the Fort Smith metro area. But there's a lot of variation around the state, and it's interesting to see how that's developing.
You also said this week, too, that you did not think the outcome of the presidential election was going to really make a big difference in terms of jumpstarting the economy one way or the other. Explain that.
Well, yeah, that was a response to an audience question. Of course, in the long run, the policies that our politicians pursue are going to affect growth. But, you know, over the forecast horizon of 2013 in particular and into 2014, the thing that really matters the most about this this election. It's going to be over next week. So that the uncertainty that surrounds the environment right now, the business environment, will at least be resolved. People have a better idea of what's happening next. The resolution of the fiscal cliff issue is still something that's hanging over us. Among economists, we have a pretty clear idea how we think it's going to be resolved. And once that's all behind us, then we'll be looking forward to what happens down the road.
Roby Brock from TalkBusiness.net talked with Dr. Michael Pakow from the University of Arkansas Little Rock's Institute for Economic Advancement. Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And Verizon, offering a wide selection of productivity-enhancing tablets for small business, including the Apple iPad. More information at a Verizon communication store near you or online at VZW.com/smallbusiness. And CEG Partners, using empirical data to better understand your customers' experiences and their loyalties. More information at CEGpartners.com.
An eclectic weekend of music in Northwest Arkansas includes an all-star lineup of Afro-Cuban jazz players at Walton Arts Center for two shows tomorrow night. Headlining the concert is Jane Bunnett, Canadian-born saxophonist. Robert Ginsberg, the host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz, talked with her earlier this week.
Well, I'm so excited that you're going to be performing for the first time, to my knowledge, in Arkansas, and with an extraordinary group. You'll be with pianist Hilario Duran and and cunguero and percussionist Candido Camero. And this is an interesting configuration and one that is not unfamiliar to you. But before we get into that, I want to just talk a little bit about your history. You were born and educated in Toronto and studied classical music, classical piano early on.
Yes.
But I understand that because of tendonitis, you had to switch to woodwinds. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I was kind of, when I got about 16, 17, I kind of got serious about the piano, and I went at it with a lot of energy and enthusiasm, and I started to prepare for my grade 10 piano examination. I went at it a little too hard, and I ended up developing tendonitis. And with that tendonitis came what was told I needed to have a period of rest and not play for a while. So what happened was I went off to San Francisco with my cousin for, I guess it was about a month or so, kicked around, you know, that area, Santa Cruz and all, you know, up and down the coast. And I had, of course, heard jazz. There was jazz records in my family, and my big brother had, you know, Monk, and they had, you know, great, pretty eclectic record collection, and I would, you know, take out records now and then. But I wasn't, like, you know, fully immersed in the idiom till I took that trip. And on that trip, I went to Keystone Corners, and Mingus was playing with his group. I had heard Mingus in Toronto, so that's what, when I saw he was playing there, I wanted to go see him again. So I went the first night, and then I went back the second night. I went every single night that he was playing.
And who was in the band back then?
Actually, well, in the band was Jack Walrus, Don Fullen, Danny Richmond, of course, George Adams. Oh, you know, and Phineas Newborn Jr. was opening up every night.
Oh, my God.
So it was really something. Having studied piano and seen just the caliber, you know, the musicianship on the stage, I was sure that they were all classically trained musicians. When I returned from that trip, I was really determined to wanting to play jazz. I did finish up. I did get my grade 10. I did go back. But after a few months of, you know, finally getting my grade 10, I then decided that I wanted to play jazz. At that point, I was playing a little bit of piano and a little bit of flute. I had borrowed a saxophone. I couldn't really play, but I borrowed an alto sax, and I think I played a number on that, too.
guess I had a lot of nerve. Anyhow, yeah, so I that's how I proceeded there.
I wanted to ask you if you could trace your interest in Afro-Cuban music.
My first trip to Cuba was 1982. It was unbelievable, the music, you know. It was just like, holy smokes. We went to Santiago, and there was music everywhere. And then came home, and in 3 weeks, we headed off to Havana, which was like going into Manhattan, you know. It was just like, whoa, the condensed music scene there.
Right.
And so that was amazing. And then we continued. We kept going. And then about 1983, I guess it was, we started to seriously think about making a recording. It took a long, long time before we got from there to making the recording. And when we did make that recording, we brought the group, every Baldwin musicians on the recording, to Canada to perform. And people, there was not the world music scene like there is now in Canada. Our friends, our musical friends that were playing jazz, and that's what we had been pretty much doing up until that point, thought we were pretty crazy. Like, when they heard that music, they did not get it. It was just like, what is this? What is this music? It was just weird to them.
That recording had an extraordinary lineup of musicians, as I
sure did. Are you talking about Spirits of Havana?
Yeah.
Well, on that one, the very, very first one, it was total Cuban. We had Yoruban Dabo, which was a group of dock workers that performed the Afro-Cuban folkloric music, rumba, and all of that. And they worked with Mercedes Valdez. And then we had Guillermo Barreto, who was Mercedes' husband, and he was a jazz guy. Mm. He knew the Afro-Cuban, but he specialized in jazz. He was crazy for Philly Joe Jones and Max Roach and Dizzy. And he really, really knew the music and had backed Sarah Vaughan and Nat King Cole and you know, really crossed a lot of racial barriers at that time in Cuba because, you know, the place was, you know, very racist. You know, the record did make a bit of hayway here in Canada, but when we got to Paris, I gave that record out to a few people and talk about a calling card. All of a sudden, like, the French, they just went crazy for that record. I was getting airplay. I was getting some of the critics, you know, were writing about it, saying, you know, Paris was a mecca for world music. So many of the groups, you know, crossing, going through Europe, African groups from China, would all perform in Paris. It was, you know, we did not have a scene like that in Canada. And so all of a sudden I found myself in quite a fantastic response. My love is still jazz. It really is. I can't imagine what would have happened if Coltrane had gone to Cuba. That would have really been something unbelievable, you know?
Let's talk about Hilario Duran and Candido Cabello.
Yeah.
You're going to be touring with, and you've worked a lot with Hilario, who is just an extraordinary Cuban pianist born in the early 50s. He emigrated to Toronto in the late 90s. He's been named one of the 10 most influential Hispanic Canadians. I'm not sure what that means, but...
Yeah. And, pretty important, yeah, because there's a lot of them here now.
Yeah, and I love this quote. Hilario Duran is an unparalleled pianist as well as being a composer and arranger of the First Order, one of the greatest Cuban pianists of the 20th century from no other than Chucho Valdez. So.
Yeah. We met Hilario for that first recording in 1990. We said we need a piano player who really loves the Afro-Cuban music like we do, but has great... jazz sensibilities and can really blend those, the Afro-Cuban and jazz. But Hilario, you know, we were blown away by how great he was when we played with him. And shortly after that, everybody came to Toronto to kind of promote the CD, the recording at a festival. And then we went back to Cuba, and we did another project with Hilario, and then we brought him back to Toronto with us to sort of perform the music that we just recorded. And then we produced a couple CDs of his own for Just in Time Records. And then we actually got him a teaching position at Humber College. Then he brought his daughter, and then he applied for Canadian residency, and the rest is history. He's a professor here now, and he's just a very highly respected artist and musician on the scene here.
Oh, he's won
very busy.
Several Juno Awards, I know he's won, and he mm-hmm. was Grammy nominated for, I think, his Latin big band album.
Yes.
And yep. also, if I'm not mistaken, Hilario was the musical director for Arturo Sandoval, right?
Right. He was for a good 10, 12 years.
Amazing.
Piano
Amazing.
Player and arranger. And then he later led his own group called Perspectiva.
It's interesting to me how a lot of these musicians of a certain age, those born in the early to mid 50s, somehow the arrow seems to point back to Dizzy, and there's always a connection.
Well, you know what? I mean, Dizzy just had such a profound effect on Cuban music.
Let's talk a little bit about Candido. And
there's another genius.
Yeah.
Well, he's really, I mean, he's just, you know, you cannot believe the honor to for us. I think he's 93. Am I right on his age there?
I want to say 92.
Okay. So, I mean, he is just a phenomenal musician and a great showman. He just knows what to do, and he's just elegant, and he's just brilliant. I mean, he was the first one to really go to three congas, and most people were just focusing on one, and I asked him, you know, how did you develop in from going from two to three? And he said, because I can. That just made me laugh. He's so funny. And, like, talk about a who's who of people that he has worked with. It's just unbelievable.
Duke Ellington, Charlie Parker.
Everybody. One night I sat up and I said, I just kept firing piano players. I was trying to figure out, stump him with a piano player that he hadn't worked with. Every single piano player he'd worked with.
I think I saw a quote somewhere where he's recorded on over 1,000 recordings.
Oh, sure. And he's funny. You know, he's not, he's just, I think people will just be so blown away when they see him if they've never seen him perform.
Jane, I cannot thank you enough for just being so open and enthusiastic.
Well, thanks. Thanks for your great questions, and can't wait to get to your neck of the woods. See you soon at the Pronto.
Jane Bunnett will perform twice Friday night at Walton Arts Center at 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock. She talked to Robert Ginsberg, host of KUAF Shades of Jazz, earlier this week. You can hear Shades of Jazz each Friday and Saturday night, beginning at 10.
It is Thursday, November 8th, 2012. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callum.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, who is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And again, wildly different choices tonight.
We love that,
don't we? Give them
to
me.
The UAFS Chamber Ensembles perform at 7:30 at the UAFS at 2nd Street venue in Fort Smith.
Which is a fantastic venue.
And it's free.
It makes it even more fantastic.
Fort Smith Little Theater opens their new show, Little Women, an adaptation of the Louisa May Alcott novel, at 8 o'clock. Tonight's the opening night gala. Tickets are $25. Mm-hmm. And if you missed the metal show Tuesday night at George's,
which included Hatebreed.
Yes, another one.
And in this
tonight,
moment,
huh?
There's another one tonight. Helmet, touring behind a new album called Seeing Eye Dog. I don't know if they consider themselves metal. Hard rockers. They formed in 1989, and they've had acclaim from peers such as Tool, Pantera, and Rise Against.
These guys have been around a while.
Yeah.
They've played on some of the biggest stages in the world.
And they perform tonight with co-headliners, the Toadies.
Yeah.
$20.
Where's this?
8 o'clock at
George's. Wow.
All right. Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas, and joining me on the phone now is Robert Kelly, a comic who will be at the UARC Bowl tonight and tomorrow night. Good afternoon.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Have you ever been to Arkansas before?
I think I have, but I think I was through there. I don't think I did a show.
You've never performed?
No, I don't remember performing there, but I'm really excited. I think this is the last state on my list.
Do the different states that you travel to, do you think about that when you're developing your routine, or do you make changes to your routine based on where you're going?
No. I have no B plan.
No B plan. It's always the same set.
I come up with stuff that I want to talk about, and that's what you're getting.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's funny enough and interesting enough that you're like, I think everybody, doesn't matter where I am or what country I'm at, or we'll be like, oh, that's true and honest, and I get it, and it's funny.
Right, okay.
Hopefully. We'll find out tomorrow.
Well, I plan on being in the audience, so.
You can tell where I come from because of my crappy Boston accent mixed with some high-bred New York accent. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
But me and my wife in the house talk Southern all the time. We have fake accents all the time because we like talking like this more.
Oh, I can put one on too, y'all.
Let me tell you something. You'll never get into a fight with your wife if you talk like this. It's fun. Her name's Dixie Lizard and mine's Bucky.
How funny.
Very addictive.
So you mentioned characters. Are you yourself when you're doing a routine in a set, or do you pull out characters?
I guess it's a heightened version of yourself. I don't do characters at all, but, I do perform, I don't really do topical humor.
Mm-hmm.
Something has to affect me personally, and then I kind of talk about it, you know, and then I perform it out a little bit. I do my wife, I do a couple characters, but not too many, you know. I don't think I'm that intelligent enough to do that, you know.
Oh, I'm sure you are.
Well, I'm smart in other ways. I know secret codes for video games.
That's something I don't know, so. Well, so you mentioned you take things from your life and your experiences.
Yeah.
So you've been a comic for a while.
Yeah.
How have your routines changed from, you know, when you began and you were in one point in your life and to now?
Well, I think your voice changes, you know, your confidence changes too. So, you know, it's, you know, the way I say something is kind of becoming the way I say something. I think that my comedy's definitely, I'm I'm definitely talking about stuff that I want to be talking about. But I think, you know, look, I talk about my childhood. I talk about my addiction, my food addiction, you know. But now I talk about I'm married, and I don't, it's not a bad thing. I love it. That was a hard thing to do, to switch up, you know, being married and all. And I love it. Like, I had to be honest about it. I'm a bald guy from Boston. You know, you think I'd go up and be like, you know, being married and my wife's a pain in the ass and blah, 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 which is all true. But I really love being married, like, to the point where it makes me sick.
Awesome.
Like, I just love my wife. And it's just that I had to go on stage and talk about that and talk about feelings and intimacies instead of, you know, lying or whatever. Mm-hmm. What would the easy way? This, you know, being married is, it's awesome. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me. So, but then I'll talk about farts for 10 minutes because I think they're funny too.
Well, there are a couple of things that you've mentioned in the last few minutes that I wanted to ask about. Like, you mentioned kind of when a joke gets old, when a set gets old, how do you know when it's time to retire a joke or a routine?
Well, it's weird, too. I think that's changing, too. I think comedy back in the day, you know, Pryor would put out, you know, a 35-minute album and, you know, have helped writing it. Now comics, like, are doing a new hour every year. You know, like, you know, you get a certain guy setting the curve, you know, a little higher, a little faster. I think you know in your heart when a joke is old because, you know, there's a joke that I do about my sister needing a kidney transplant. You know, she was going to die. And there's a joke that I came up with. It's not a joke. It's a, you know, I tell the story and it's just a funny observation and what happened. And it makes me feel great when I tell it. I'm like, I can't wait to get to that joke. And then there's other jokes that I do that I'm like, oh, I've been doing this for 3 years. This stinks. Oh, I got to stop, you know. I mean, it's a real hard thing to let go of a joke. It's like breaking up with a girl, you know, when it becomes a habit. You're like, oh, but she's such a good person. She's so nice. I mean, she's not, I know her mom. What am I going to do for Thanksgiving? I'm going to be alone. I mean, we already bought Christmas presents together. Ugh, you know?
Right.
It's the scariest thing in the world to, I think it's the scariest thing in the world to become a good comic.
It's scary.
It's easy to become a comic. I think it's the scariest thing in the world to try to become a good one. You know, and then...
You want them to laugh.
You want them to laugh, but you have to have them laugh. Because if they don't laugh, then I don't get to come back, and then I don't make money. I'm not, you know... But there's a point where you have to go, I'm doing this joke. I don't care. I'm going to do it. There's a difference between making a crowd laugh and making a crowd listen. I'd rather have them leave going, that joke about hating God. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I have a joke about you ever hate God. And I do this whole thing. And people, you know, religious people sometimes go, oh, my, what? Whoa. But then at the end of it, they realize, oh, I get it. I understand what he did. But you have to listen to get there with me. If you're not listening, you're going to be
upset.
Either mad. Yeah, you're going to be upset. If you're listening and if you trust me, as a comedian, to get you there, then you'll laugh. Hopefully you'll laugh. Did I get too deep?
No, I like it. But it was great actually. It was great. But I'm like, okay, I'm kind of speechless now.
Well, it's funny too. You know, because you know you never really, you know, people think that we're just funny. But look, It's a weird time now too that like I don't drink, I don't use drugs, I'm trying not to eat like a savage. The food is the last one, you know. So it's a weird time in my life to be doing comedy because you know there's nothing left. The only thing left in my life is to be happy.
Well, I think it sounds like a good time for you to be doing comedy. It sounds like you're happy.
Yeah, look, you know what? I'm happy. I'm excited. I'm really excited to come down to here because this place, I love places like this where it sounds like they really care about a good show and they really care about comedy. You know what I mean? You know, it's not seven shows over the course of, you know, 4 days. And, you know, I'm doing a few of these gigs this year, too, where you're coming in and you, these interesting little venues where they care. Even this thing we're doing now, like, you care about doing a good interview.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not like, hey, Robert Kelly, what's going on, man? Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know what I mean? Tell us some jokes, man. You actually care about your interview.
Right.
Which is, that's awesome. I love that that's happening in comedy, where you can come in. And so I'm excited to do the show there, because you can get away with being a comic at places like this, because people, like I said, are listening.
Right.
They came to see a show.
All right. Well, we'll see you tonight. Thank you, Robert. I appreciate it.
Thank you. This is a great interview. You're so nice.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too. Take care.
Bye. Robert Kelly is a comedian who holds TV comedy credits for Comedy Central Presents, HBO's Tourgasm, and portraying Louis C.K.'s brother on Louie. He's also been in several movies. He will perform tonight at the UARC Bowl at 8 o'clock, and again tomorrow night, Friday, at 8 and 10 o'clock. This is Ozarks at Large.
It is Thursday, the 8th day of November, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Jody Beznoska, who is the Vice President for Communications at Walton Arts Center.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. How's everyone doing today?
Well,
making
see.
It. Yeah. It's Thursday.
I feel the same way.
We have had a fundraiser and an election.
Yeah.
And now
back to normal life, maybe?
You know, got a week and a half before the Thanksgiving turkey has to be in the oven. So.
Wow.
Or
I know.
2 weeks,
two
right?
2 weeks.
2 weeks from today is Thanksgiving.
My goodness.
Yes.
Jeez. Wow. At least the election's over.
Yes.
At least we can all take a breath after that. Thank goodness. And to help make that breath a little bit sweeter, we put something out yesterday at Walton Arts Center. We're doing no fees this week.
Oh.
A post-election special for all November and December shows. If you buy your tickets now online or over the phone, we will not charge you the order fees.
Hmm.
So that's a nice little addition to your pocket if you're going to buy tickets.
Just this week?
Just this week. Okay. Just to say thank goodness we made it through the election. We're still here. Mm-hmm. And although, you know, all the ads and everything are going to go away, hopefully. So,
little insight to my observational skills. I never even knew there were fees. So,
I did. Yeah. I've ordered online before.
Okay.
So,
yeah, there are definitely fees.
Okay.
If you buy, if you're like Kyle, though, and you're a subscriber, it's, you know, the fees aren't as
noticeable.
As noticeable, okay. Yeah, because you're buying a lot of tickets at once. And so,
I see. That okay. helps. All yeah. right. So, feeless tickets that could get us to a show early include?
They could include for tomorrow night, the second show in our Starlight Jazz series, Jane Bennett and Hilario Duran with Candido Camara. Mm-hmm. If I said that.
Latin.
What did
jazz,
I say?
Right?
Yeah. Candido Camara.
Afro-Cuban Latin.
Yep. That's tomorrow night, 7 and 9 o'clock. You could also get tickets to the Wailers on Saturday night.
Oh, that's right.
Or you could get tickets to Letters Home, our theatrical show, which is happening
Sunday.
On Sunday. Or you could do Eileen Ivers on November 15th. She is the Grammy-winning fiddler. She's sort of royalty in the world of fiddling. And you could do a show at the end of November called All Is Calm, The Christmas Truce of 1914, which I think we spoke a little bit about last week,
mm-hmm.
a theatrical and choral work exploring that unique moment on Christmas Eve in 1914 when the two warring sides in the war came together and sang.
Celebrated Christmas Eve. Yeah.
Yeah. You could do that, and you could also buy tickets for Billy Elliot, which is our next show in the Broadway lineup. It feels like we literally did just finish the first show in our lineup with Shrek, but Billy Elliot comes on December 4th through the 9th, I believe, or 10th. 8 performances. This is the first time this show has ever been in this market ever. Like, this isn't a repeat. This is a new show. Of all the Broadway shows we've brought here, this is one of the few that I haven't seen. So I'm really looking forward to it. And it's probably one of the most technically challenging show for the performers. It's a really involved, you know, show, especially for the young boys who play Billy Elliot. There are 4 of them who travel with the cast, and they rotate out because it's such a difficult role. And what we're learning more and more as we hear about Billy Elliot is, you know, they travel with a school. Like, so when they're here, we have to have a school in Walton Arts Center for these boys. So
the four,
keep,
the 4 young men
yeah.
are being taught.
Because they're just like, I mean, they're 13, right?
Mm-hmm.
12.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they're on the road touring, but they still have to go to school. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we have to do is make sure they have a space to do that.
So not necessarily the green room, but someplace in Walton Arts Center will have to serve as that 8 to 3:30
mm-hmm.
school.
Yeah. I think In this particular case, we will actually be taking over the space that we use for our patrons' lounge, mm-hmm. and that will become the studio. That I think that will become sort of a rehearsal studio and also the classroom for the kids. Wow. And so we move things around a lot for this. And this, we you know, every time we have another conversation about what we have to do for Billy Elliot, it's one of the biggest shows we've ever had. It really brings into relief how limited our space is. And why when we talk about expansion, which we've been talking about a lot lately, this is a perfect example of how the expansion will help us.
I've seen the movie, Billy Elliot. Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the Broadway show.
Okay.
Oh, Yeah. Okay.
Seeing the movie, and I loved the movie. Yeah. I think the father character is one of the strongest father characters this side of Atticus Finch. I think it's just a beautiful, wonderful movie. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering why the production is so big, because it's ballet. I mean, what are the big production numbers that require?
Sets were pretty
elaborate.
I mean, basic but big, okay. If I recall.
Yeah. Did you see it when they went below the stage?
Yes.
Yeah. So because it's a mining town, mm-hmm. there's some elements mm-hmm. to it of that. I should be careful and say that I don't think they're going to go below the stage in our performance, right. Because we don't actually have... There's no cutout in the floor to take them down.
I was about to ask, yeah. Are you doing something today that we don't know about?
No, but it is a pretty, the mining town is the center of the story, and I would assume that there's a lot of detail and a lot of involvement there. But there's also a lot of rigging, because mm-hmm. the dancers fly, and so that carries with it a lot of okay. equipment and stuff too. So yeah, it's a pretty
well. And
pretty
not
big
that
show.
Lighting. I mean, I'm sure you have a pretty good lighting setup already. Mm-hmm. But I mean, red. I'm seeing a lot of red as I remember the production. Yeah. So
and you saw it on Broadway.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that was neat. That's cool. Oh, I'm jealous.
I'm looking forward
to it. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah,
so am I.
Yeah.
This is I'm really excited to see it. So that's December 4th through the 9th. I'm sure we're going to talk lots more about it. We also, before that, we'll have another jazz show, the Sean Jones Quartet. And then we will get right into the Christmas madness, the holiday madness. We'll have Mannheim Steamroller. We'll have Winona's Rockin' Christmas. We'll have the Preservation Hall Jazz Band, Creole Christmas. I can't wait to see that one.
Same here.
And we'll have the Nutcracker. So all of this is coming down the pike faster than you would think. I keep seeing posts about how few days there are till the holidays, and it kind of scares me. So make sure you come to a show before you get into the holiday madness.
But we have the most days you can have between Thanksgiving and Christmas this year, because Thanksgiving is as early as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's so good, right?
Extra time.
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And one more thing I wanted to remind everybody is that you may have been hearing about this on Facebook and Twitter, but we have added another show to the season. We have added Scooby-Doo, the Musical Mysteries.
All right.
Got that email this morning.
In May of next year. But tickets for that show go on sale tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., online and on the phone.
Now, as you said with Shrek, while that is something that entertained patrons of all ages, it was a full show, so mm-hmm. think about the age. Mm-hmm. Scooby-Doo, is that one that's more directly
Yeah, Scooby-Doo
for...
is definitely made more for the kids.
Okay.
It's going to be, I'm assuming it will be a shorter show. I'm assuming it will be a little more, maybe not quite as clever for the adults. However, those of us who watch Scooby-Doo, I'm kind of excited to see what they do with it.
Spoiler alert, they're going to take the mask off somebody at the end.
And just as we are talking about this, I did want to mention about Billy Elliot. It might be an easy assumption to think that Billy Elliot is a kid's show because there are kids in it. Mm. But I mean, Kristen, having seen it, it really isn't.
It's kind of serious.
Yeah, isn't meant for the little kids.
Yeah.
It's meant, I mean, I would say older kids would probably really enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, junior high, high school.
Yeah.
The movie is beautiful. The movie is just fantastic.
Yeah. So I did want to say that. I think that's an important distinction mm-hmm. to make between Shrek and between Scooby-Doo.
Gotcha.
Your 5-year-old's probably not going to really get into Billy Elliot.
Right.
And it's also got some adult themes and some tough content in there. Yeah. So great.
Okay. Thank you, Jody.
Thank you, guys.
Jody Beznoska is Vice President for Communications at the Walton Arts Center.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 8th of November, 2012. It was on this day, 1864, Abraham Lincoln was elected to his second term as President of the United States, an election held in the middle of a civil war. The Confederate Army had recently gotten so close to Washington that Lincoln himself was able to watch a battle standing on top of a parapet with field glasses. On the 30th of July that year, 4,000 Union soldiers were killed in a disastrous attempt to invade Petersburg, Virginia. Lincoln knew he was going to have to call for another draft. The Army needed a 500,000 more soldiers. There was an enormous war debt. And at the end of August, Lincoln wrote a memo to his cabinet that said, "It seems exceedingly probable that this administration will not be reelected." The Democratic Party was running on a platform of ending the war. But then news arrived in early September that the Union Army had captured Atlanta and Mobile. And suddenly the Democratic Party looked like the party of surrender while Union forces were winning the war. And Abraham Lincoln carried every state except New Jersey, Delaware, and Kentucky. It's the birthday of Dorothy Day, born in Brooklyn, 1897, one of the founders of the Catholic worker movement, workers who lived in voluntary poverty and spent their lives in service to others. Her autobiography, The Long Loneliness, came out in 1952. And it's the birthday of the woman who said, "In a weak moment, I have written a book," Margaret Mitchell, born 1900. And the book, of course, was Gone with the Wind, one of the best-selling novels of all time. When she was 20, she fell off a horse. She got very badly injured, kept re-injuring herself. And a few years later, she had to quit her job as a newspaper reporter and stay in bed. And her husband brought her piles of books from the library to keep her entertained. And then one day came home with a Remington typewriter so she could write her own. She decided to write about what she knew. And so she wrote about Southern belles and Civil War veterans. Kept the book a secret until an editor from Macmillan was in town looking around for manuscripts. And finally, though she said the book was lousy and she was ashamed of it, she brought him piles of manuscript about 5 feet high. It took a lot of cutting, but it was published in 1936, an immediate sensation in the midst of the Great Depression. A book that begins, "Scarlett O'Hara was not beautiful, but men seldom realized it when caught by her charm." Here's a poem for today by Faith Sheeran entitled Tara. "I grew up watching Gone with the Wind with my grandmothers rehearsing for my life as Scarlett or Melanie. On the bright steps of my southern childhood, I practiced pinching my cheeks, holding my breath, while someone else tied my corsets. I could make a dress out of curtains. I could deliver a baby while outside Atlanta burned. When the wagon took me home to Tara, I would save the plantation by murder or marriage, my hat tied beneath my chin in a cheerful bow. Like Melanie, I would forgive anything, befriend prostitutes, donate my wedding ring to the soldiers. Someone would kiss me in a field where cotton no longer bloomed. I would want whatever I could not have. I would die trying to have another child. My husband would never recover from loving me, my shape on that marble staircase, too restless for an afternoon nap." Tara, a poem by Faith Sheeran from Moving the Piano, published by Stephen F. Austin University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vedder. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
KUAF, supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, celebrating the American spirit by uniting the power of art with the beauty of nature. The museum opens at 11 a.m. daily, except Tuesdays. More information available online at crystalbridges.org.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, and Bloomer.
Where is Bloomer?
Southeast of Fort Smith. And just west of Charleston, I believe.
Okay. Bloomer, Arkansas. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening.